Hey everybody, this is Pierre Quinn and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On today's episode, I'm going to give you an update once again on my swimming lessons. We'll talk about the iPhone 10 and the Apple presentation. We'll share what one of the biggest pieces of leadership effectiveness is. And we'll chat about the rankings, ESPN's rankings of Lonzo Ball and Carmelo Anthony. And of course, I'll give you a reminder about the Revision Conference coming up October 29th in Baltimore, Maryland. So, listen up. So I've been swimming for, what is this, five lessons, six lessons, maybe it's five. And I just had my most recent lesson yesterday, recording this podcast on a Thursday afternoon. This time, my last swimming lesson was yesterday on Wednesday afternoon. And something unique happened this time around that I wasn't anticipating. Usually when I go to the pool for my lessons, my coach meets me there. We chat a little bit about what's going to go on during the lesson. He asks me how I'm feeling and if there's some things that I'm concerned about. And then we go down to the locker room and we both change and then we both get into the water. Well, I noticed that this time when I arrived at the pool, my coach wasn't at the spot that he usually sits. And you can look down into the pool and through the glass. And I saw him down at the pool and he was waving and he gave me a thumbs up saying, "Hey, are you ready? Are you good?" And I gave him a thumbs up and I go down to the locker room, change, put on my swim trunks, go to the pool, put my bag down, and we're just chatting, catching up because I wasn't able to hit my lesson the previous week. And I talk about that on the previous podcast episode. And we're walking toward the pool and he says, "Well, I don't think I need to get into the pool with you anymore. I think you got it." Now, up until this point, my coach has been there in the pool with me whenever I got nervous, whenever I got afraid, whenever I thought momentarily that I was about to drown. My coach would be there to bring me up. I could grab him and just get stable and get back comfortable with the water. But now I was in a place where he wasn't coming into the pool. And now it was a situation where I had to trust myself and trust his training, and he had to trust his training. And he stood on the side of the pool and he gave me instructions throughout the lesson. And I was a bit nervous in the beginning because I was so used to having him so close and being able to grab onto when I panicked or swallowed a bit of water. But he wasn't going to be there this time. And there were some times where, yeah, I swallowed some water and I lost my balance a couple times, but I was able to recover and able to get through the lesson. And that experience just shared something that's really important for leadership. And there are times as a leader when we have to get out of the pool and let people swim on their own. Now, up until this time, he was there. He was holding my hand. He was holding my arms and making sure I was stretching out and making sure I had the right posture and making sure I had the right technique. And at any time that I was not certain, I could just reach out and grab him. He would be right there. But in order for me to grow as a swimmer, my coach could not stay in the pool the entire time because I would continue to use him as a crutch and not rely on the skills and the mindset that he's teaching me. So the entire lesson, the entire hour that I was in the swimming pool, he did not get in there once. And for those of you who are looking to become more effective leaders, ask yourself, depending on the team, depending on the person, depending on the scenario, when is it time for you to get out of the pool? When is it time for you to stop hand holding? When is it time for you to stop being there so close? And because you have trained, because you have prepped, because you have demonstrated, because you have worked with individuals on your team or even in your family, you've given them instructions, you've given them guidance, you held their hand the entire way. Now, when is the time that you get out of the pool and let them swim on their own? Now, listen, you're not abandoning them. It's just your instruction is taking on a different format. No longer are you right there beside them. There's a bit of a distance, but your voice and your presence are still important. So how can you apply that as you look at the rest of your week, as you look at the areas of a life where you're being called to lead? What are some areas that it would be in your best interest and the interest of the people that you're leading and in the best interest of your organization to get out of the pool and let them swim on their own? Because you've taught them, you've coached them, you've trained them, you've given them the skills, and now you need to watch them and coach them from a distance as they apply the skills that you've taught them. So I watched the Apple presentation, like some of you on listening to this podcast and like probably millions of people around the world. And I'll be honest, I'll side with those who say that Apple has lost something since Steve Jobs moved on and since he died and he was no longer to provide that real-time hands-on leadership to the company. And it's really difficult to replace not just a leader of the company, but a founder. That the creativity and the vision and the plan and the idea behind Apple really rested solely in the mind of Steve Jobs. And when he made an exit from the company earlier and the company was floundering and he came back to the company and there was this resurgence and all this innovation and all of this new perspective on technology and just the presence and the umph of having him around made a tremendous difference for Apple. Well, now that Tim Cook is at the helm of Apple, people are saying, man, we really miss the leadership and the guidance of Steve Jobs. And it really forces me to ask a question. If Steve Jobs, for as much as an innovative leader as he was, much as a creative brain as he was, as much as he's really revolutionized the computing world and the technological world with Apple, as much as he was all that, is there a part of him that wasn't that great of a leader because he did not put in place a succession plan? Was there no strong succession plan in place where he was cultivating, not just from sickness, not just from, the time, knowing it's time for you to move on, but from early on in the company, was there a plan in place to transition to the company to last beyond him? And are we being unfair to Tim Cook? Are we being unfair to the new head of Apple? Well, not that new anymore, because we're expecting him to try to be Steve. And he's not. He's a totally different person with a different way of thinking and probably a different way of leading. And what we're seeing in the company is someone wrestling with a legacy and a vision that's been handed to them, combined with the vision that they feel like they have in the moment. And a lot of people are saying we've been unimpressed for years by Apple and we want the next big thing. We want one more thing. And I think that really speaks in some cases to our lack of contentment. And I shared this on a Facebook post that our desire, our strong desire for Apple to create one more thing that we can really rally around really embraces our lack of contentment. Like, we want the new thing. And here's the thing, and I'm convinced of this, that if iPhone 10 was just crazy, just off the rocker, crazy, super advanced technology, that regardless of the price point, that people would come up with the money to buy the phone if they thought it was just wow and amazing. And the crazy thing is there are still people who are going to buy the iPhone 10. They're going to pay the $1,000 just to say that they have it, just to be a part of that experience. Some people are going to spend the $1,000 and complain about it and say, I didn't really want to buy this. It doesn't do what I wanted to do, but they're still going to use the product. And the question for us is, as much as we critique, and I talk about critique and creating in a previous podcast episode, But as much as we critique what other people are doing, as much as we're critiquing Apple and we want them to listen to their super fans and we want this and we want that and we want innovation. Well, first, we don't know. We don't even recognize. Some of us, our brains are not even in a space to recognize how much innovation has taken place to make what they have now. But that's really kind of besides the point. For as much as we look at what Apple is doing and what they're not doing, the question remains, what are we doing? What are we creating? What culture are we creating? And then asking people to join us, asking people to be a part of us. Are we just consumers of culture? Are we just people that take what other people have to offer and we're always buying, we're always making purchases, we're always shifting our financial resources to support things that other people have developed and designed? When is it going to come the moment? Because I know some of you are entrepreneurs and some of you want to be entrepreneurs and some of you want to quit your job and go off on your own, or some of you want to work in a different area in the company that you're working with. When is it going to come the time where you actually reach out and take the chance and begin to work toward creating a culture of your own and asking people to be a part of it? Or are you content with just critiquing culture? Now, I'm an Apple person. You know, I got the MacBook Pro. I got an iPad, I got an iMac, I got an iPhone, I got the products, and I love the products because they work together, they're smooth, and they just work, and they fit me. They fit my style, and they fit my creativity. And I'm cool with that, and I don't have to go on this long tirade defending Apple, or you don't have to go on this long tirade defending Android or Samsung or whatever your electronics of choice are. You don't have to go on that long tirade, because here's the thing. For as much as we're arguing about these brands, our argument about these brands is simply bringing more attention to them. Even if you say you don't like it, by saying you don't like the iPhone, Apple platform and what Apple's doing, you're forcing people to be in a place where they're investigating with what you don't like. And if you say, I don't like the Android platform, I don't like Samsung phones or LG phones or Google phones or whatever phones, and you go on this tirade, you're really putting people in a position to investigate what you don't like. And you're bringing brand awareness to a brand that you say you don't like. What would life look like if you work to create something on your own? A lot of us have mouth. A lot of us have things that we got to say, chips on our shoulder. A lot of us have digital courage, which means we'll say things on social media, but we won't say them in real life. And what would life be like if we took some of that energy and actually created a culture, created something that we could be proud of, and created something that we could invite people to join us in, instead of just being critics of culture and critiquing what's happening around us? And what I found is that's very difficult to do when you're not comfortable with yourself. For anybody on here listening to this podcast who has wrestled with self-esteem, you've wrestled with what you see when you look in the mirror. You wrestle with what parents or friends have said, what happened to you in high school, and people called you the ugly girl or the goofy guy, and you have all these things. And even though you've grown up and you've matured and you've changed and you've had some successes and been effective, you're still in a way sort of haunted by those things that have happened to you in childhood and growing up. You know, high school, junior high and high school can be some really tough years as young people. Many of them who are not comfortable with themselves take out their discomfort or negotiate their discomfort by making fun of other people. And I'm sure most of us have been there. But when you get older and you have a family or you have a career, you have responsibilities, or you have individuals and teams that you're leading, those same hangups come back. And what's really important for us is to work toward the place where we're comfortable with ourselves. So I'm, you know, short height, average height, depending on who's making up the study. But I'm shorter than 6 feet. I'm 5'10", depending on if I'm wearing shoes or not. I could even be 5'11". But for the longest time, I wanted to be over 6 feet, and having uncles and cousins who were tall and having to struggle with, man, I'm not as tall as they are. or not just in height, just in everything. I'm not as gifted of an athlete as that person. I'm not as good of a speaker as that person. I'm not that great of an organizer as that person. I'm not as creative as that person. I'm not as engaging as that person. All of these things that we can compare ourselves to other individuals and say that we're not. We're very good at saying what we are not. We are not very good often at saying what we are. And when we're not good at saying, when we have difficulty saying who we are, what happens is you can be placed in a mold or placed in a situation where someone is trying to make you out into who and what they want you to be. For example, take this idea. If you have a sibling and you have an older sibling, and your older sibling was the smart one, they were the athletic one, and they were the engaging one, and you weren't that person. You were smart, but you weren't as whatever, however you judge smart, IQ or whatever, however you gauge intellect. And I know that's very subjective, but you weren't as athletic as they were, and you weren't as outgoing as they were. And then being in a family where the family's always trying to compare you to the other person, and instead of highlighting and supporting and encouraging you based on your personality and skill set, you end up being discouraged because you're comparing yourself to somebody else, to that older sibling. And it's a fight. It's a fight. And, you know, a counselor, a coach could help you fight through that. Fighting through accepting and embracing who you are and building your strengths around who you are. And I really suggest that many of us take a personal SWOT analysis. It's an acronym often used in the business world, but you can apply it to every facet of life. And the SWOT acronym stands for S is for strengths, W is for weaknesses, O is for opportunities, T is for threats. And if you drew a rectangle and created four equal quadrants for that rectangle, and then put S in one quadrant and W in another quadrant and O in another quadrant and T in another quadrant for your SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and then go through and fill in those quadrants. So for your strengths, what are the things that you're good at? What are your skills? What are your talents? What are your abilities? What are you known for? What have you studied? Where are you influential? And create a picture of what your core strengths are. And then for weaknesses, be honest with yourself. The things that challenge you. And I tell people all the time, my challenge often is details, logistics. I'm really not into logistics. I'm into big picture thinking and big events and brainstorming. So one of my weaknesses is working through the details. Now, what outlining my weaknesses does, it puts me in a position to get help around the area that I identified as a weakness for me. But if I'm not willing to embrace it and identify it as an area of weakness, and maybe weakness is too strong, depending on who your counselor or therapist or life coach or self-help book that you read, maybe you can use area of growth, but area of growth doesn't fit the SWOT acronym. So you can strike through weaknesses and put area of growth if that works better for you. O is opportunities. Where are your opportunities to grow? What training do you have access to? What resources do you have access to? Where can you stand a little bit more support and encouragement and coaching so that your area of opportunity becomes an area of strength? And the last one, T, threats. What are the barriers or inhibitors to you being the best version that you could possibly be? What are the things, if left unchecked, if left untempered, that will move from becoming a threat to becoming a weakness for you? And how can you work through those things? And take 10, 15 minutes, take even an hour and work through your personal SWOT analysis, and then find somebody you can talk to about it. Now just talk through the process of how you went about identifying your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and your threats. And from that, you end up with a being able to establish a battle plan and a strategy. So when people ask you to do things, you can look at your strengths and say, okay, I'm good in this area, but one of my threats is time is overloading my time. I'm good with managing my time, but I'm threatened by overloading my time, so I'm not going to be able to do it. Or someone says, well, can you help in this area? And you look at the area and say, well, that's actually a weakness for me. I won't be able to help you in that area. Or when you're recruiting for a team, you don't want to overload your team with everyone who is strong in the same areas. And it would be helpful for you to take your team through this SWOT exercise. You don't want to overload your team with individuals who are strong in all the same areas. You want to diversify your team and look for the weaknesses or the areas for growth as opportunity to build your team and to grow your leadership. But you got to get comfortable with yourself. And probably the most difficult quadrant for you is going to be that quadrant of weaknesses, areas of growth, of challenges. But being able to effectively lead is really hinged upon embracing who you are and being honest about who you are not, so that people, so that the team, so that the organization doesn't try to mold you into a person that you're not capable of being, because that's not who you are, and that's not where you're strong, and that's not where you can best help the team. Speaking of team, one of the crazy things going around the basketball world, the sports entertainment world, were ESPN's basketball rankings. The season has not started. Preseason starts in October. The season hasn't started, and people are going crazy because ESPN ranked Carmelo Anthony. And Carmelo Anthony is an NBA veteran, NBA All-Star. He's an Olympic gold medalist. He's impacted the game in a significant way. He's ranked 64. Now, Lonzo Ball, who went to UCLA, was drafted by the Lakers, who had a strong showing in the NBA Summer League, is ranked 63. NBA veteran, 64. Lonzo Ball, 63. And what makes people upset is the reality that Lonzo Ball has only played in a summer league game. He hasn't played in a preseason NBA game. He hasn't played in a regular season NBA game. And people are asking, how can ESPN make these rankings about where these players are based on their skill set if we've never seen Lonzo Ball in an actual regular season NBA game? Well, we gotta be honest about a couple things. One, ESPN is in the business of creating culture. And we talked about culture with Apple. ESPN has created the culture that they are the experts when it comes to sports entertainment. So by looking at these rankings from ESPN, we're really challenging the authority that they've created for themselves. They're also in the business a bit of creating controversy, because controversy is watched. Controversy is paid attention to. Controversy gets you talking, just like many of us are talking about these rankings. And rankings are a big deal to professional athletes. Before, if some of you recall, before it was their player rankings inside of a video game, not even a real game. Their rankings inside of a video game, and who should be ranked in 99, and who should be ranked in the 90s, and who needs a higher ranking, and who was snubbed in the creation of the video game, not even real life. Who was snubbed in the creation of the video game, and how can you work to change those rankings? Now we're talking about real life basketball, but Lonzo is you could see the push to make him this new face or new personality in the NBA. And really to make him stand out. And they want people to come to his games and pay attention and track him. And this ranking him at 63 and ranking Carmelo Anthony, NBA veteran, at 64 creates that big bit of controversy, creates that big of intrigue that the media machine just really needs to capture our attention. Now, here's the challenge. The challenge for Lonzo Ball and the challenge for Carmelo is really in some ways the same challenge for us. Will you rise to the challenge of playing above and beyond your ranking? Will you rise to the challenge where at the end of the 2017-2018 NBA NBA season that when they rank you at the end of the year, that you are higher than 63 for Lonzo Ball and you are higher than 64 for Carmelo Anthony? Will you let this controversy become a catalyst to help you to work harder and to push you so that you play beyond your ranking? And for many of us listening today, we need to get to the place where we're willing to play beyond our ranking. Life has ranked us. School has ranked us. They've given us some grades in school when we weren't being serious, or there was even a teacher who didn't like us for whatever reason. Our job has ranked us, and sometimes it's because we weren't doing a good job, and sometimes it's because there's some manipulation or people have an affinity for other people. Our families have ranked us, even especially as it relates to birth order and family's affinity to personalities and all of that family drama that comes along with it. The question for you is, will you use what you're facing right now as a catalyst to play beyond your ranking? So after everything is said and done, people will step back and say, man, we ranked him at 64. We ranked Carmelo at 64. But he showed out and he's much better than we gave him credit for. And even Lonzo, we ranked him at 63, but he's much better than we gave him credit for. And he's demonstrated leadership beyond what we even thought was possible. Speaking of leadership, I'm doing a special program for ministry leaders. If you lead in a ministry space, if you're a church pastor and you've been pastoring for a couple years, if you're a ministry student, if you're a local church leader, I need you to check out my 5-week church leadership intensive on my website, prcquinn.com/church-lead. For 5 weeks, I'm going to give you some intensive training on webinars. I'm going to coach you with some coaching calls, going to have master classes with effective church leaders, and they're going to pour into you and help you become the best ministry leader that you could possibly be. That's 5 weeks. You're going to get a semester's worth of leadership training, ministry leadership training in 5 weeks. So check that out. Check that program out on my website, prcquinn.com/church-lead. And I promise you, you won't be disappointed. You also won't be disappointed if you're in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area and you come to the University of Baltimore, Maryland campus on October 29th for the Revision Conference. It's a half-day experience designed to equip you with the motivation, the inspiration, and the practical tools to think, to imagine, to plan again around areas of major life change. We had our first Revision Conference July 19th at Bowie State, and it was phenomenal. It was amazing. It was life-changing. After the conference, people really took life seriously. They started businesses, they quit their jobs and followed their ventures. They went back to school, they lost weight, they went to counseling, they got help for their relationships, they started ministries, they became better persons because we just didn't motivate and inspire and challenge them. We helped them to put together some plans of becoming better. Some practical stuff. So join me and the team, revision2017.eventbrite.com. We want you in the building on October 29th at the University of Maryland, Baltimore campus for the Revision Conference. I promise you, you will not be disappointed even a little bit. And what we're giving you at the conference, you'd spend hundreds of dollars for, even thousands of dollars for in a similar program. But we're giving it to you at a special rate. So check that out, revision2017.eventbrite.com for the Revision Conference. Hey, that's all I got for this episode of Leading While Green. I hope you've enjoyed this journey with me. And I hope you have no plans of getting off the train soon, because I want to be there to help you live, learn, lead with confidence. I want to help you get to the other side of whatever you're dealing with right now. So until next time, take care and God bless.